Before we jump in, I want to tell everybody about this fantastic organization, Spark. Spark was an organization founded by Akil Clark in 2018, right here in Des Moines, Iowa. Its main goal was to provide free books for kids whose parents couldn't afford to buy them books. To date, Spark has distributed about 5,000 books throughout the Des Moines community, but now Spark is looking to take its efforts nationwide. And with your help, we can create the largest free youth book club in all of America. Please check out sparkfndn.org to learn more about the organization, but also check the link on the description. I run a screen printing business called Neighborhood Twit, and we have pressed up a few Spark designs for sale, and the 100% of the proceeds or the profits from each sale of these Spark items will directly benefit the Spark Foundation. So check it out.
Two different groups facing off today in Marshall County, one demanding the removal of Confederate symbols that stand outside the Marshall County Courthouse, the other side demanding they stay put.
Regardless how the next person feel, I'm not gonna take my flag down. If I got anything to do with it, ain't no monument gonna come down.
Daniel Sims says he was adopted as a child.
My whole family's white. Went to all white school, grew up in an all white neighborhood. My grandfather was white, and he was the main one that fought in this war here, and he's taught me everything I know.
He explains how he'd feel if the statues and flag were relocated.
It may make my blood boil if they just come up here and feel like they could just tear it down. I don't see me still living if they do that right there.
How could this have happened? A black white supremacist. Our search for answers led us here to the Wexler Home for the Blind, where Mr. Bixby spent the first 19 years of his life. Bridget Wexler is the home's headmistress.
Well, he was the only Negro we'd ever had around here, so we figured we'd make it easier on Clayton by just telling him and all the other blind kids that he was white.
You referred to African Americans. What exactly is your problem?
How much time you got, buddy? Where would I start? Well, first of all, they're lazy, good-for-nothing tricksters, crack-smoking swindlers, big butt-having, wide-nose breathing all the white man's air. They eat up all the chicken. They think they're the best dancers, and they stink. Did I mention that before?
Yes, I believe you did, sir.
Matter of fact, the summer of 1999, my parents announced that I would be going to a new school district and that I would be attending my freshman year of high school, not at Hoover High School, like I had envisioned growing up. You see, a year prior to this, we had moved to a suburb right outside of Des Moines, a quote-unquote nicer part of town. Their decision for sending me to the new school had nothing to do with getting a better education or being exposed to different types of people. No, their rationale was very simple. They both worked two jobs, and it was a hassle for them to drive me from the community that we lived in to the junior high school that I was attending in Des Moines. So, when I became a freshman, they decided to take advantage of the convenience that the yellow school bus provided that pulled up in the front of my house each morning. Although I was shocked by this announcement, I wasn't completely turned off by it. I had solid relationships with my junior high friends, most of whom I had known since elementary school. And honestly, at 14 years old, I looked at this as an opportunity to meet new girls. Plus, my main man at the time, D'Angelo, would also be transferring with me, and so I knew I wasn't going to have to embark on this journey alone. I remember shopping for school clothes that summer. Light blues and oranges were really popular colors back then. I remember wide-leg jeans were popping. The brands that I wore were brands like Lugs, Carl Kani, and of course the granddaddy of them all, For Us By Us, or better known to the masses as FUBU. I even had a silver chain with an L pendant. Fast forward a few weeks, the big day has arrived. I am now a 14-year-old freshman in high school. My new high school in this new school district had all of the bells and whistles. Clean hallways, scented bathrooms, a coffee bar. It kind of reminded me of Bayside High, you know, from Saved by the Bell. In fact, the makeup of the school was pretty similar to Bayside. Statistically, for every 20 Kelly Kapowskis, there was one Lisa Turtle. So in other words, we were the only chips in the cookie. Yet, This void of black faces roaming the hallways did not deter me. Or at least, not at first. It didn't take long at all for the buzz to catch on about the two new black kids in school. There's nothing really flashy about us necessarily, but we were a couple of handsome, stylish brothers. Those new girls that I was interested in meeting definitely made themselves known to us. The guys seemed pretty friendly too. But these bells and whistles and friendly faces would soon wear off, and the challenging of my culture and identity would soon follow. The last school that I went to had about a 30% black population. Now, some of you guys listening from bigger communities might hear that as a low number, but when the city that you live in has an overall diverse demographic of 20%, then 30% feels pretty good. Well, my new school had about a 7% black population. And of that 7%, most of the black population were biracial kids. And the kids that weren't biracial, most of them were being bused into the school from a group home for troubled youth. It felt like my friend D'Angelo and I were the only two black kids that had two black parents that did not live in a group home. Our status was elevated because we were not group home kids. In other words, that automatically gave us an opportunity to gain the respect of our white schoolmates. But would they respect us? You don't live in the group home? You're still just like a thug, though, someone said, pointing at my baggy jeans and Lugs boots. What does FUBU stand for? Are white people allowed to wear it? A thug? Yo, man, wear whatever you want. It's a free country. I don't know how to respond, but I would just try to laugh it off because certainly my new white friends wouldn't actually be racist. But here's the thing, my white friends from Des Moines would have never said anything so stupid. Anyway, as the year went on, I was constantly subjected to a form of passive-aggressive ridicule. I think now we call this microaggression. Every day, there was some type of question about what made me authentically me. Why did I wear my hair in braids? How long did it take to make the braids? Why do I have an afro? Can I touch your hair? Why do you talk like that? I wish my hair would do that. Another stupid thing that I would hear regularly. I used to think that this was so strange because white people never treated me like this when I went to school in Des Moines. We were all used to each other's differences. In fact, we celebrated those differences constantly. But with all the questioning about the way that I looked and the way that I dressed and even the way that I talked, it ultimately made me feel like maybe I was doing something wrong. My teachers even made me feel marginalized, even though I got A's and B's in school. I had a knack for making people laugh, but my teachers would act like I was a class clown. Cracking one joke in the middle of class would often get me sent to the hallway. Meanwhile, the all-American white boys could do no wrong. They could act stupid as hell in class, and the teachers would laugh along with them. It was almost like those boys reminded them of their own sons. Remember how I described the black population at school earlier? I differentiated myself and D'Angelo from the mixed kids at school. Not because I don't look at biracial kids as being black, I totally do. But one major difference about the mixed kids at my suburban school compared to the biracial children from my last school was that almost every single black mixed kid at my school had zero connection or any relationships at all with other black people. These were kids whose black fathers weren't around, and so they grew up with white moms and white family members, or they were adopted by white people. I remember one time complaining to one of my mixed black friends about what I was going through and how I was treated, and how I felt very weird and strange about how I was treated. She didn't know how to handle this conversation, and she became very uncomfortable and eventually angry. Angry that I would even bring up the topic. Probably because this new way that I was being treated was how she had been treated her whole life. She was also very light-skinned. I don't know what you're talking about, Larry, but I'm white. What? No, you're not, I said to her back as she walked away from me. I was so heartbroken and confused. My parents taught me to take pride in who I was and where I came from. So to hear her proclaim that she was white and not black or not even mixed led me to ask myself, why does she hate herself so much? But then I realized that that was her protection. You see the, and I'm holding up air quotes here, the whiter she acted, the less amount of bullshit she would have to endure. Or at least, she thought. Out of all the black kids and biracial kids at the school, D'Angelo and I were probably the only ones who looked like we came straight from the pages of a Vibe magazine. So what do you think I did? I had this epiphany. And here's a summary of that epiphany. If it ain't white, it ain't right. I thought, well, maybe if I can show them that we are more alike than different, the student body will respect me more and I'll have less issues. So I cut my hair. I took off my L chain and I put on my seashell necklace. My pants got tighter and I switched out my Lugs boots for Doc Martens. No more FUBU for me. The emblem was like a walking target on my chest. By now, if I wasn't rocking Ralph Lauren, then I was wearing Nautica. I would have worn Tommy Hilfiger, but both black people and white people alike told me that I wasn't allowed to wear his clothing. Black people told me I couldn't wear Tommy because supposedly he was a racist, and the white kids at school said that I couldn't wear Tommy because that's why FUBU was invented. I switched up the gear, but it wasn't enough. I had to fully assimilate. My dad had a couple of vocabulary books in his office. Why? Perhaps he was trying to assimilate as well. You see, my dad came from the south side of Chicago. Stateway Gardens. Google it. He also spent a number of years living down south while in the army. He definitely picked up an interesting accent mixed with both southern dialect and Chicago speak. Perhaps he was trying to eliminate some of his Chicagoisms to make the transition from army life into civilian life / corporate America. He once told me after he got his job with the state of Iowa in 1996 that his manager confessed to him that he thought the name on his resume belonged to a white man. I can only imagine the other kinds of bullshit statements he would hear at his job for the next 21 years of his life. Anyway, if my words were making me blacker, then perhaps I needed to learn new, whiter words. All I wanted was a fair chance of being treated like everyone else. I wanted these white kids to know that my parents were just as well off as theirs. I was tired of people being surprised that I lived in the same neighborhood as them. I thought, the more they respect me, the less they'll question me so much. Overnight, I went from being the Fresh Prince to Carlton Banks. But damn, now I'm being referred to as Carlton Banks. Almost instantaneously, I went from being called Thug Life to being referred to as the whitest black guy I know. By the way, to my white listeners, if you are telling your black friends that they are the whitest black person that you know, that's racist. Being the whitest black guy that they knew definitely was not the vibe I was going for. To this day, when people refer to me as a Carlton, which has actually happened to me within the last 12 months, I check them real quick. What up, my nigga? Yep. Don't think I'm just going to sit up here and talk about my experience at a white school without mentioning the blatant racism that I dealt with as well. The N-word was used a lot, and I'm talking hard R. I definitely had my fair share of, can I say nigga around you? Hell no. Okay, but what if it's in a song? Man, no! Well, if it's such a bad word, why do rappers use it in every rap song? Well, not all rappers, I'd say. The hard R's, N-I-G-G-E-R, were frequent as well. D'Angelo and I referred to as niggers when their white girlfriends wanted to hang out with us and not them. Walking home from the mall sometimes meant people from high school shouting, nigger! As they zoomed off in their pickup trucks. Some kids would actually say nigger in casual conversation just to see if they could get a rise out of me or D'Angelo. I remember one time, this kid named Justin, who lived on my street, used to sometimes drive me to school, and he yelled out nigger out the car window at another vehicle for cutting him off in traffic. I remember he looked at me and he apologized, but he didn't really seem very apologetic at all. That was the very last time I ever let him give me a ride to school, and to this day, I kind of want to kick his ass. You know what I find odd? Not one white person ever defended me or my friends from these types of attacks. If I would have been at Hoover in Des Moines, I promise you that our white friends and white allies would be ready to knuckle up against anybody, white or black, that was talking racist crap. What's even crazier is that even the mixed kids didn't come to our defenses. Hey man, why do you hang out with Matt? He's racist as hell. He's called me nigger at least 50 times this year. Yeah, well, he doesn't say it around me because I asked him not to. And that's when I quit hanging out with Kanye West. I'm not sure what hurt more, the anti-black racism I experienced daily, or the extent of what the few black kids would go through to assimilate and fit in. Assimilating is not some new age concept as it relates to black people and how they are treated. In fact, a lot of early assimilation ideology was created by Christian abolitionists who believed that black people should not be slaves, but that in order for them to truly receive God's grace, they needed to be tamed and civilized. In other words, be as close to white as possible. And some black people believed that even back then. Sadly, some still do now. There are certain black people that look down at other black people because of the neighborhoods that they live in, or the kinds of things that they do for work, the way that they talk, the food that they eat, etc. A lot of the same black people that I knew from back then learned as adults that assimilation did not make them immune from racism. And many have since embraced their blackness, or have at least begun reaching out to me more often. Assimilating is dangerous and harmful. I've seen black people adopt racist ideology as a byproduct of assimilating, kind of like our friends at the beginning of this episode, Daniel Sims and Clayton Bigsby. Sure, Clayton's character is fictional, but many of us black folks know real-life Clayton Bigsby's or Uncle Russ's or Stevens from the movie Django. Anyway, I completed the 9th and 10th grades at this high school, and the summer of 2001 was a true game changer for me. My mom's second job was working at the local Office Depot. One of her coworkers had a pea green 1984 Chevy Celebrity station wagon that he was getting rid of for $0. This putrid looking vehicle would eventually be my chariot to freedom. My mom gained possession of this car, and now my first whip, the Green Bomber, is mine. With my parents' blessing, I open enrolled and rejoined my friends at Hoover High School. It was like a breath of fresh air roaming this older, rundown high school with a rainbow of faces roaming the hallways. I threw my before they were cool tight jeans in the trash and brought back my wide legs. I replaced my Doc Martens with Air Force Ones, and once again, my circle of friends was diverse and multicultural. Believe it or not, I'm actually grateful for the 2 years that I spent at that racist-ass high school. Truthfully, those tough 2 years prepared me for corporate America way more than my years in college. But that's another conversation for another day. This is The Only Chip in the Cookie, and I'm your host, Larry from Iowa. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the Only Chip in the Cookie podcast. As always, you can show your support by following us on Instagram. Look up The Only Chip in the Cookie. Also, we appreciate your Cash App love as well. $ Chip and Cookie Pod. And also, make sure you check out neighborhoodtwit.com as well for other ways that you can help support Black-owned businesses.